This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is a member of the House Ag Committee, a former farm broadcaster, and now representing Arkansas's first congressional district, Rick Crawford. Representative Crawford joins us in just a few moments. First off, Bart Kenner, USDA economist with final ag trade numbers for this fiscal year.
Agricultural exports are $178.7 billion, down 9% from the previous year. Agricultural imports were $195.4 billion, up 1% from the previous year, for a trade balance for fiscal year 2023 of negative $16.6 billion, which is down $18.6 billion from the $2 billion trade surplus for fiscal year 2022.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Rick Crawford. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Arkansas and is a member of the House Ag Committee. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you throwing that honorable qualifier on. That's very generous of you.
Well, it is earned as as a member of Congress. And by the way, for those who don't know, you actually have kind of been in my chair in the past, right?
Oh, yeah, for many years. Not in your exact chair, but one probably very similar to it.
Well, I know a question you're probably getting pretty often right now is, where are we on a farm bill with the 2018 farm bill that's now expired and running out of time for 23? What are you watching there?
Well, I think what we're likely going to see is an extension. What I'm advocating for, and I think many members are, is a one-year extension that gets us through December of 24. That's not to say that we're not going to get a farm bill done between now and then. What that means is we start the year knowing where we finish the year. That is to say, we need to maintain some degree of continuity. And if we can do that with the current construct through a one-year extension, that I think will serve producers better, because we're going to start the year. We're wrapping up harvest right now. It won't be long before our producers are going back to the banks, and the banks are making those operating loans, and they're going to need to know, that we're all singing from the same hymnal. So I think that's important to extend that out for a full year. That said, we will probably get the farm bill done and USDA reauthorized in the first quarter of next year, which would then supersede the extension. But what that means, though, is that at least we're providing a degree of certainty with a one-year extension.
We're in a fairly different place than we were when that last farm bill was written in 2018, and one of the I'm glad you brought in the banking side, the lender side, because we're also seeing interest rates that have increased as well. Has that been a concern?
It's been absolutely been a concern. It has been for a couple of years. You know, we went, in 2021, we started obviously seeing the signs of those interest rates starting to increase. And so farmers starting that year, you could absorb a 1% increase in interest rates, a 2% increase in interest rates. But the reality is, even a 2% interest rate increase in 2021 was essentially doubling the cost of money, because we had been paying, very low interest rates for an extended period of time. Now, granted, we also were seeing, commodity prices in the tank for an extended period as well. So not necessarily a fair trade. But then what we saw was another doubling of interest rates year over year. So we went from a 4.5% interest rate to some of those farm loans were being now at the 9% interest rate in some cases. And so it made it that much more expensive, combined with inflation that was driving input costs through the roof, and those conditions persist. And so what we can't do in a farm bill is bring interest rates down. What we can't do in a farm bill is to make inflation go away. But what we can do is try to provide some degree of certainty for producers, and that is knowing, yes, the cost of money has gone up. Yes, input costs have increased. But at least we know that we're still making those production loans under the same programs that we have done for the last several years. And so there's at least a certain degree of continuity with respect to those programs.
One area that I don't think the Farm Bill really dives into is the workforce. And we talk about interest being a challenge. We've talked about inputs being a challenge in the past, but ag labor has been an ongoing challenge. Are we getting anywhere closer to seeing the finish line?
Well, you make a good point. The Ag Committee, ironically, has very little jurisdictional authority over ag labor. What we do have is the subject matter expertise and the relationship with the farm community. And so as a member that represents a very rural district, you can imagine I get a lot of phone calls from farmers that are having problems with an H-2A program that is really not has not maintained pace with the demands of the current farm economy. So we've got some labor shed issues. We can't rely on our domestic workforce because, quite frankly, it's hard to get the domestic workers to come and do the kind of work associated with ag production. And so for a long time, we have relied on essentially outsourcing farm labor. That has historically been from countries and from places like Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, and others in the region. But we're now starting to see countries like South Africa that are displacing to a large degree those other migrant workers. And the program is becoming more costly. There's a variety of reasons we see that are contributing to that. And so Chairman Thompson decided we needed to really formalize an effort to address the ag labor crisis in rural America. And so we stood up the Ag Labor Task Force, which I chair along with my counterpart on the Dem side, Don Davis from North Carolina. So we have been on a mission, and we've actually had about a six-month charter here where we could bring in the relevant stakeholders, have the things that we need, go out and meet producers, and collect as much information as we could. And Monday of this week, just yesterday, we released the interim report that really kind of puts some meat on the bone what we're trying to do. And I have really qualified this effort by saying that this has been a very narrow focus. And that is to say we are specifically focused on the labor issue. We are not making this about immigration. And this is where we've had problems in the past, where either immigration leverages ag labor or ag labor leverages immigration, and neither one of those issues is addressed effectively. Our goal was to focus only on the labor side as it applies to ag, and our members got that message, and we stayed very, very much within those parameters. And I think we've delivered a great product out of the Ag Committee, and that is this interim report. And we'll finish this up probably by the end of the year with a final report with some legislative recommendations. Now, what we're going to do after this interim report circulates, we're going to allow for members of Congress to come in and sort of make their recommendations as well. We're going to have two or three member day hearings to collect their thoughts as well before we issue a final report with legislative recommendations to the committees of authority. As I mentioned, the committees of authority are, ag is not in the equation. We have to go to judiciary, foreign affairs, education and workforce, and in some cases, ways and means. But ag has very little jurisdictional authority. But what we do have, as I mentioned before, is the experience to provide what we think are really good recommendations to the committees of authority. And so we're probably going to take a piecemeal approach to this and address those issues in the relevant committees. But we do feel like we're going to make some good, strong recommendations that's based in reality.
In the past Congress, and you mentioned the immigration side of this, Workforce Modernization Act, we get it through the House side, but can't get it across the finish line on the Senate side. And I know you're limited to what you can do there, but do you have some relationships and some ideas that it could clear the Senate as well?
Well, we think so. I mean, obviously, because we've taken such a narrow focus on this as it applies to ag labor, and we have deliberately steered clear of the immigration part of it, because anytime you put comprehensive in front of an effort, it usually dooms the effort. So we've deliberately taken a very targeted approach to how we address this problem. And we think based on the feedback that we're getting, that it's actually making a difference. We're hearing that from our colleagues on both sides of the aisle. This has been a very good bipartisan effort, and we think we can get some bicameral uptake as well. So I think the approach has been appropriate. I think we're going to see a really good opportunity for the first time to actually affect some positive change.
I know the only way you can remember whether or not you've talked to me recently is whether or not you've had to talk about Cuba. That seems to be my go-to every time we have the conversation. So with just a couple of minutes left here, Cuba and ag trade, is anything happening on that front?
Well, it has really stalled, and a lot of that falls in the lap of the Cuban president, Manuel Díaz-Canel. I worked very hard, as you know, on this issue, and really, in good faith on my part, I've kind of gone out on a limb for this, because this wasn't an easy step among Republicans, although we were making progress. Where we lost traction is there were a couple of issues. One of them had to do with the Havana Syndrome attacks that took place in our embassy, and the lack of response, the lack of good faith demonstrated by the Cubans on that. We sort of got past that, and I was continuing the effort. Then we saw where Díaz-Canel made the decision to double down on his support for Maduro in Venezuela, and that basically was a deal breaker for most of our conference, demonstrated that we really couldn't deal with someone who wants to continue to associate with someone like Maduro. So while I do believe that, in principle, Cuba would be a great market for U.S. commodities, I still believe that. But we can't do it unilaterally, and there ought to be some give and take. And so far, what we've seen from the Cubans is only a willingness to take and not to give. And so there are a number of issues where they have not yielded, and one of those was on their dual currency, but other issues had to do with human rights and free speech suppression and the mistreatment of dissidents and a variety of other issues that they just have not been very forthcoming on. And so I still think that there's opportunity in Cuba, but it can't be a one-way street where we give everything and they don't make any changes at all.
We've been speaking with the representative from Arkansas and member of the House Ag Committee, Rick Crawford, on today's Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Rick Crawford, representative from Arkansas.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest from Arkansas, Representative Rick Crawford, a member of the House Ag Committee.
Join us at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, November 28th through 30th at the Amarillo Civic Center. Connect with hundreds of exhibitors showcasing the latest ag technology and attend agriculture-focused seminars, too. Earn your certification at the Beef Quality Assurance Training or attend livestock education sessions with the Texas Tech School of Veterinary Medicine. Hear from experts at the Cotton Conference, earn CEU credits, or attend the Texas Wheat Symposium. It's all happening at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show. Visit AmarilloFarmShow.com for more information.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
New ways to support the nation's specialty crop industry.
The Specialty Crop Competitiveness Initiative is being launched by USDA as a new initiative to support U.S. specialty crop businesses facing rising challenges in remaining competitive in domestic and international markets.
Deputy Agriculture Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small discussing the new initiative with reporters Thursday. It contains an online resource directory with USDA resources and services for specialty crop producers and businesses.
That can be found at www.usda.gov/specialty-crops. We're hoping that if you prefer, especially with long days farming, accessing a website might be more helpful in your own time.
She adds USDA will engage with the specialty crop industry in the coming months to improve response to grower and business needs. Also announced, over $70 million in funding for 21 projects under the Specialty Crop Research Initiative. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.